The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, so let's go ahead and get started with the meditation this evening. So finding a comfortable spot, and if you're already sitting, then finding a posture where you can feel upright and also relaxed. Giving yourself the opportunity to arrive. Especially on Zoom, sometimes we can be doing something else right up to the moment when we join a Dharma class. And so just taking that time to sense that you're here. Sensing the presence of your body on the cushion or the chair. Sensing the presence of your mind in mindfulness. And allowing yourself to settle back while still remaining alert. Relaxing the body, allowing the face to soften, the eyes and the eye sockets, letting the forehead kind of expand, jaw release. Down through the neck and the shoulders, letting the shoulders drop. Softening down through the chest and the belly. Releasing any bracing in the arms or the legs. Inviting ease through the body will support the mind staying present. But if anything is still tense or sore, that's okay too. It's not a problem. We're just inviting ease. And also gently sensing into the mind, inviting a receptivity of awareness. Gentle opening to how things are right now. Nothing needs to happen. There's not so much to do. Just connecting with the mind and the body as they are. if it's supportive, to connect with the breath or the body a bit at the beginning, that's fine. But we tend toward opening the mind and just being receptive. And as the mind begins to settle, even just a little bit, we might touch briefly into the attitude of the mind. Is there any wanting? Wanting more peace, wanting a quiet mind? Wanting the body to be more at ease? Or is there any sense of not wanting a thought or an emotion? Or is there any difficulty with connecting? Is the mind wanting to be spacey? And the attitude is just one more thing to open to in mindfulness, to include. Trusting this practice of being with things as they are. in the last few minutes of this meditation, I'd like to invite a shift from open awareness to a brief reflective meditation. So as you continue to sit quietly, please recollect a time recently when you gave something, you were generous in some way. It could be anything, but maybe choose a time when it was a pretty simple act of giving. And just open your mind when that memory is present to what your body felt like and what your mind felt like with that act of giving. And once that feeling is clear, just gently return to your open mindfulness. Is that better? Okay. Sorry, I was inadvertently muted. So tonight we will explore a foundational topic in Buddhist practice, which is dana. And normally that word is translated as generosity, but it actually means, more closely, it means giving. And it also refers to what is given. So dana is nearly always first in Buddhist lists that it appears in because it is so fundamental. So we give every day in some form. And so it's an area where we can bring mindfulness. We can observe how giving occurs. We can observe the effects of it in our body and our mind. So it's very good to do that. It's good to be, particularly to be aware of wholesome states and wholesome actions. They help condition the mind to appreciate that and do more of it. So what is a gift? Well, it's, you know, it could be something physical, like physical things or money, but it can also be a time, attention, a smile, some wisdom, the Dharma, A related aspect of giving is also letting go. We can let go of control. We can let go of our opinions. We can let go of judgments. This is also sometimes quite a form of generosity. So giving operates on many levels. Many levels. It's an action that requires us to consider another person. So it's inherently a relational quality. And it also operates internally on the giver. If it's a material gift, we have to let go of something to give it. Something is being let go of. And then on the more mental and spiritual levels, giving is an opportunity to open the heart and to cultivate various wholesome mind states. It can even condition the mind to like this feeling of letting go, as I mentioned just a moment ago, which can actually be helpful down the line as we move more and more into liberation. We want the mind to be conditioned to enjoy letting go. So I think dana is best explored in an experiential way. And it has, like everything, it has a role. There's a role in it for wisdom and clarity, which makes it part of our spiritual path. So the Buddha was once asked, where should a gift be given? You know, it's a natural question. And his response was, wherever the heart feels confident. It's an interesting answer. Wherever the heart or the mind feels confident. So I think that's something of an initial criterion. If we're exploring giving, we can contemplate where the mind feels confident, and we can also explore it through action. You know, what would it look like to explore that? So we can watch the mind at moments where we have an opportunity to give or where we might give. And we can start to learn our patterns around feeling confident. Some of it, of course, has to do with who the recipient is. You know, does it seem like this is a person who's going to really benefit from our gift? Or if we're giving to an organization, do we resonate with their mission? And do we have some trust in their capacity to be acting in line with that mission? But we're simultaneously also going to learn about our own predilections that are independent of the recipient, right? So maybe we're a little bit stingy. And as we give, we have thoughts come up like, oh no, I'm not going to have this anymore, or something like that. Or maybe there won't be enough left for me. Or we might perceive ourselves as poor, even if we're not. There can be all kinds of perceptions around giving. Or we might be very judgmental, holding the recipient to some kind of standard, high standard. Are they good enough? And that's a judgment going on in us. It's not so much about them necessarily. It might be worth noting that we can observe that children's minds are often not as limited by thoughts like that, and they tend to just kind of be spontaneously generous. So we can learn something from that as adults who have complicated our minds with a lot of conditioning. Or maybe we love to give. You know, maybe giving is like always a delightful experience for us, and we give to anyone who asks us. You know, maybe sometimes even beyond the point of wisdom. I don't know. So check out your mind. You know, check out your mind and see if there are certain patterns around giving. So it's important because we see, as we explore this experientially, that the quality of our mind is a key factor, both in whether we give or not, or whether we should, and also in how fruitful that gift is. In several suttas, the Buddha gives a range of motivations that people might have around dana. And he distinguishes also between the act of giving, which he calls dana, and the kind of the movement of mind behind giving, you know, like the motivation, which is called chaga in Pali. So for example, we might give a gift out of fear. It's one of the lower forms of giving. So maybe we're afraid of displeasing someone in power if we don't give. Or we might give a gift out of other pretty unwholesome mind states like desire or hatred, or even as an insult. You know, we could give somebody something, in a manner or an object that is a little bit insulting to them. I've also received a lot of solicitations. So this is all about the emotions behind giving, right? I've received a lot of solicitations that seem to try to play on my emotions without inspiring the confidence that the Buddha says is, you know, is an important factor in giving. I remember one time that I received a long time ago, getting a phone solicitation to give to some organization or charity or something. They were seeking funds, and the whole manner of the person's approach I experienced as very pushy. They kept, you know, they talked a lot, and I could hardly get a word in edgewise. And then eventually I was finally able to say something in this conversation. And what I said was that I was not interested in giving. And the person pushed on despite that. And they said, well, what is it that would make you more receptive to this? And I, at the moment, I answered very honestly. And I said, you know, truthfully, I would be more receptive if you weren't so pushy. And I think that was a little surprising to the person, but I really felt that way. You know, it was like the way that my emotions were flowing from that conversation, I didn't have that confidence and inspiration in wanting to give that the Buddha names. Of course, we also, you know, we also give for more complex relational and social reasons. You know, we give because somebody has given to us, and so we feel indebted in some way, or we proactively give in order to put somebody in debt to us so that it will, you know, obligate them in the future in some way. Or, you know, we may be following a tradition in our family. You know, it might be expected within our family or our social circle that we do certain acts, donations or acts of generosity. And so we feel obligated to keep up that social milieu that we're in a sense. Or we might feel obligated to give out of some kind of guilt because we have more than somebody else. And so we've been taught that that means that we need to give. So it rapidly gets complicated, doesn't it? And this, that makes it an even better realm for mindfulness, right? It's not that we have to figure all of that out and, you know, make a chart of how it all works. But, you know, the Buddha encourages us to just notice in the moment what is going on, what thoughts are there, what emotions are there, what stories might be there, and how does that feel, and how's the mind-body system working with all of that. It's interesting that, you know, not all of this sort of social relational things is considered problematic in the Buddhist teachings. Giving is explicitly named in the suttas as creating a good reputation. And the Buddha approves of this, actually. He says it's worthwhile to be in good standing in your community. And so, you know, that's interesting. But I've also reflected that in the modern world of social media, like with Facebook and Twitter and other things like that, this benefit becomes a little bit more mixed because we can post about our giving in a way that is going to generate more likes, and people are going to see us as a generous person. And, you know, there can be complications that are more related to the ego than to simply, you know, being a good community member, being somebody who is respected and responsible, as the Buddha was praising. So I'm kind of going through in a lot of detail all the things that are mentioned by the Buddha, you know, not to create a lot of complication and a lot of rumination around our motivations to give, but just to point out that it is somewhat complex. There are a lot of factors, a lot of conditions that might be coming into play, and to encourage knowing something, at least, about what's going on in there as we are generous and as we are giving, which we do every day, as I said. So just having some awareness around that. It's good to know why we're giving, both in general and in the moment, in this very instant. So this, that places it right in the realm of mindfulness. So there are some kind of reflective questions that can be helpful to ask around giving. And I'll name a fair number of them and you can pick the ones. And I wouldn't think you would want to go through all of these, but just pick, you know, the ones that seem kind of resonant to you and maybe try to remember them. So we can ask, what is happening in my body when I give? And that was something I asked at the end of the meditation. You know, is there openness, relaxation? Is there contraction? Is there heat? These are clues about what might be going on. And then, you know, another question is, what's going on in the mind? Is there a self around it? Or is it a letting go of ourself and who we think we are? Is there compassion, or is there maybe pity? One of the more, you know, near enemies of a Brahmavihara. Is there a feeling of depletion or weakness, fear, vulnerability? Giving can be a vulnerable act, actually. If we're offering something that we're not sure they're going to like, or, you know, there can be a little bit of an opening of ourself, of our heart to that person. And how does that feel? Is there confusion because you're unsure if this is the right thing? And what do you do with that? Do you plunge ahead or do you hesitate? There's no right answers, as always, in these cases, except that we want to lean toward the more wholesome side of what we're doing. Is there a story present? You know, are we giving because we have an idea in our mind? This is what's going on for this person. This is what they need. Here's what I can do. Now I'm going to give. Have we checked if that story is actually true, or is it something that we sort of concocted based on what we think is going on? Sometimes we know that our complicated stories about what's going on for someone are not true, right? And so here it is. We've acted on that, but did we know if it was true? Is it based on a belief of how I'm supposed to be or how I'm not supposed to be? Is that what's motivating my giving? So, you know, mindful attention can just help us be more aware of these things. Sometimes it might not even be appropriate to give at all. You know, we can also ask, is this an appropriate gift? Is it too much? You know, am I giving unwisely? I am going to give away too much. You shouldn't harm yourself through giving. Or is this a time when actually the best thing is just to let the situation unfold? I shouldn't try to go in there and do something, but maybe the most skillful thing is to let come what comes and then act in the next, after that happens, and then see what to act. So I remember hearing a story from a friend who's also a longtime practitioner. This is many years ago, but she was, her granddaughter wanted an Apple Air, it's a kind of a notebook computer. And my friend is the grandmother, and she had gotten in the habit of, in her words, not disappointing her granddaughter. Why? Because she wanted to be seen as a generous, wonderful, loving, kind grandmother. That's nice. But she had gotten in this habit, she realized, of not disappointing her granddaughter. And so that's pretty self-aware of her, I think, to realize that. But she wasn't sure about the Apple Air because it's pretty expensive. It's kind of, she didn't feel that was just a trivial gift that she could give. So she hesitated a little bit. And so then her granddaughter sent her a list that had kind of a comparison side by side of the the Mac and the PC and why the Mac was better. And it was a list of attributes and how it was superior, but she left the price off of the list. And of course, you know, the Apple was a lot more expensive than the equivalent PC. And so my friend wrote back and said, would you please include the price in your comparison? And so it was getting kind of complicated, right? And so she realized, of course, my friend was wise enough to realize, you know, if I splurge and I get her this expensive notebook, it's not actually going to end her desire. There's going to be another desire after that. Also very wise. So in the end, she had to really reflect, you know, how is this sitting for me? And what she ended up doing, you know, which is not the only solution, but what she ended up doing was sending her granddaughter a check toward a computer, not for the full amount. And, you know, that then things could keep going. So part of working with generosity is also to work with other people's possibly somewhat outrageous asks of us for, you know, for giving. And how do we handle that? And do we have enough clarity and strength to act in line with being generous and in line with our values? So this is a real area of mindful introspection. So the mind has a lot of intentions, and we can give most straightforwardly when we're aware of them. And they tend to be kind of mixed around generosity. It gets complicated. So what I do in cases where I see that I have mixed motives is that I do make an effort to give something or somehow, but I try to emphasize, like in the moment of giving, I try to imagine coming from the more wholesome side of those. And if there's a little bit of, you know, I'm going to try to get you indebted to me, or a little bit of, look at me, I'm the generous grandmother, or whatever, I kind of de-emphasize those in order to not give so much fuel to them. But it is, you know, it isn't that you should demand that your giving be completely pure or else you're not going to give, because generosity is really good. You should give, but still have some wisdom around that. So it's also good to know, after all of this analysis, that giving does not have to be logical to yourself or to others. There are moments where it's just a spontaneous thing. You have no idea why, but you've got to give this, and it's great. You know, that's the Dharma somehow flowing through us, and we complicate it just by thinking about it too much. We can also give for the very wholesome reason that giving makes the mind tranquil and happy. It does. Check it out. A clean act of giving, and this was part of the reflection at the end of the sit, is a clean act of giving tends to bring happiness and peace. And those are good. And when we do notice that in our acts of giving, we can emphasize that. We can remember that. It's easy to give something and then kind of move on, you know, even if it's something small. You know, your office mate says, do you have a pen? I can use mine, just ran out. And you say, sure, I've got a whole box here. And then the next moment you're on to the problem you're having on your Word document. But you could notice in that moment how good it felt to give that pen. It was so easy. And there's a moment of lightness, of peace, connection, and just noting that and then moving on. It's part of the things that are worth noticing in mindfulness. So when we tune into these good feelings, then more and more those will become, they'll become its own motivation. You know, we'll want to give because we want that good feeling, that tranquility and peace. So the manner of giving during the actual act matters also. Just to say, so, you know, we can give casually or we can give with a clear focus. We can give directly or indirectly. We can give respectfully or disdainfully. There can be an edge to how we give sometimes. We can give in a timely way or an untimely way, and many other ways. So even right in the moment, it's good to be aware of the manner of giving. And again, there's, you know, the wholesome side of it, giving respectfully, giving deliberately, giving directly, giving with some focus, knowing that that's what we're doing instead of kind of, you know, tossing it off. You can see the difference, right? On one retreat, the teacher gave a brief Dhana talk, and part of what she said was that she gave a teaching. What she said was she encouraged us to interact with the Dhana box in a way that was skillful. I thought that was a nice phrase. And she suggested that we could put the check in with the simple wish, may this act of giving be a condition for the realization of Nibbana. And I thought, wow, you know, that's something that we might not bring to mind every moment. It's an act of letting go. You know, any material gift includes letting go of something. And so to say, wow, could this tiny little drop in the ocean be part of the condition for the realization of Nibbana? So the general thrust of all these teachings and the reason that we want to notice this in our daily mindfulness practice is that it purifies the act of giving. We know what it feels like to do a so-called clean act of generosity. We know what that feels like. It's simple. There's an obvious need. The desire to give arises. We give in a simple way. We feel good. We move on. And we remember it with joy. That's a simple, clean act of giving. And that can happen more and more often, that we don't have residue around our acts of giving or papancha before we do it. Should I not, etc. And so if we give in good ways repeatedly over time, whether it is seen or unseen by others, we will develop a mind that has a proclivity toward generosity, the disposition to give. This is what chaga is, this motivation or the movement of mind behind giving, which is distinct from dana, the giving itself. And so you know, we start to walk through the world with maybe an attitude of what can I give instead of an attitude of what can I get here. So it's a big difference, and it makes a difference in the world. And it can all come about just through being more mindful. So I think I'll stop there and ask if you have any questions or comments or stories to share at this point. About Dhana. Or your practice of it, things that you have noticed. Yeah, Ronnie.
Okay, I think I have a couple, I don't know whether they're questions or just reflections. I remember, I think somebody asked Dalai Lama how much to give in Dhana, and he said something like, give what makes you happy. Is that the same as what the Buddha said about, I don't quite understand what the Buddha said exactly, you know, about confidence.
Well, it's a little different in that the person was asking where to give, like who to give to essentially. Mm-hmm. And the Buddha said, give where you feel confident, where the mind is inspired. Whereas the Dalai Lama was asked how much to give after you've decided where you're going to give. So it is a different question. But I think the spirit of those two answers is similar. It has to do with, you know, with our heart, you know, with, does the heart feel good in this process? Do I feel good about giving to this person or this organization or this animal or whoever's going to be the recipient? And that has to do with a lot of factors. But you know, so confident, I think, could also be, you know, give where we feel that the result will be good, give where we feel inspired, something like that. And then give an amount that makes us happy. Well, that's so that we can look back on it and have a reflection that makes us smile. So it becomes something that sustains the heart over time. Does that help?
Yeah, I still think it's a very complicated question in my mind. And, you know, there's so many strings attached, and oftentimes it's not the clean giving or the unconditional giving that, you know, we all like better.
Yeah, I agree. But of course, those entanglements are all coming from our mind, right?
That's true.
And so that's the realm of this practice, is to notice what is going on there in the mind and start to, just by seeing, start to disentangle some of that.
Okay. I also have the other half of the question. And my culture, which is Chinese, it's often easier to gift than to receive. And sometimes I've been met with giving a friend a gift, and yet the friend really didn't want a gift. Part of my understanding of generosity is also not just in the giving, but the receiver is also part of this process.
Yeah.
And that without the receiver, the gifting cannot happen.
That's true.
And so sometimes, I'm trying to encourage, one friend in particular that I have in mind to think about it from the other perspective, as a receiver of a gift is also part of this generous act. And
it
it's
is
a really hard sell to this friend. And I wonder if this is just very cultural, or do you have any comments about this, being on the other side of the gifting?
I see. Well, your point is very well taken, is that the receiving is the whole practice in and of itself. I only had time for one talk tonight, so we didn't get into that. But, I appreciate your identifying that there are some cultural features around giving and receiving. But I can say that in white or Western culture, receiving can also be difficult. And a lot of that has to do with actually with the self and, a sense it the self comes up, am I worthy of this gift? Or, I'm too strong. I don't need help. I'm fine. I don't need it. And so but all of that is coming from an image of who I am. And so receiving requires also a letting go, in order to receive. Letting go into the relational moment that's happening there. And sometimes what we're receiving isn't actually what we want or need, but we receive it anyway because the person is giving it. And so we're somehow allowing that. But I don't know that it's easy to explain that. I didn't quite hear a question in your, it's a practice for your friend to receive. There can be subtle ways, like if they do receive something, you can say, I feel happy that you received that, or something like that. You'll know how it works in the moment, but something like that to reinforce that behavior.
Thank you.
It is the half hour, but if there's another short one, it's okay.
Just a thought.
Yeah, Fred.
One of the things that I reflected on recently was there are so many things going on in the world these days that we're making a donation will help, hopefully. And I was in something of a quandary, where should I give? Mm-hmm. But one of the thoughts that that I have come to is that it's all connected.
Very nice.
And so, it's not that it doesn't matter where you give, but give, and hopefully it will have an effect.
It will ripple out in some way, unseen ways. I think mm-hmm. that's very beautiful. And our giving always ripples out in ways beyond what we can see. I can say that with confidence, but it's a practice also. And I love that conclusion. Give where you feel confident or happy, and then mm-hmm. let the Dharma do the rest, because mm-hmm. it is interconnected. Yeah, thank you for that. Okay.